Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wrestling Brothers Podcast. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Greg.
And we're here to recap the events of this past week, starting with Fastlane. So, Greg, we had Fastlane. We're going to talk a little Raw and SmackDown this week. We had a few interesting events that occurred. I know I didn't quite get home to about 8:15 from where we were at that night. So, the Miz and McMahon match, I just missed, but I think you caught some of it. So, let's start there.
I didn't catch the match. I catched the results, and then I went back and watched the match. I knew something was going to happen. I think we all did. I have to admit, I was shocked. I didn't see it playing out the way that it did. I didn't think Shane was going to be the one to turn. But, okay, it is what it is. It's been a while since we've had a heel Shane McMahon, and it gives Miz a match at WrestleMania. Probably involves the father somehow because he was attacked and is part of all this. So as long as it stops at WrestleMania, I guess it's fine for what it is. I hope they don't take this and turn it into some month-long or two-month-long big drawn-out feud, because I don't think anybody wants to see it.
No, I really don't. It's one of those things that because this feud's been going on, I can't think of anyone else that like, oh, hey, Miz should be wrestling so-and-so at WrestleMania. Now, I don't know where you'd put him, so I guess it's as good as anything if it's a given that Shane McMahon has a match. I'm not surprised that Shane went heel, though, because I kind of felt like they were establishing that back at the Saudi Arabia show when he inserted himself to become the World Cup winner and the greatest in the world. And in fact, I thought they were going to do something heel with him sooner. I don't know exactly what happened on the heels of that. Maybe they just kind of dropped that whole World Cup thing because the Saudi Arabia show in itself was quite controversial at the time. But yeah, the Miz thing is what it is, and let's hope the match isn't any more than 6-7 minutes.
You said something about what else would Miz do. I know the rumors are that Samoa Joe is going to end up with John Cena. A couple of knuckleheads out there are talking about actually dragging the Undertaker back for a Samoa Joe match. I don't think that's going to happen. But
that would make no sense.
I'd be okay with a Miz-Samoa Joe match for the U.S. belt. They're both still young in their prime, contender-worthy wrestlers. Let's make a match that means something. For Miz, the match with McMahon means nothing. You put Samoa Joe in there against John Cena, it's not going to mean anything.
Yeah.
So that's what I actually personally would have rather seen, but like you said, it is what it is.
Well, my point there was is that Miz and Samoa Joe would be right now, if they just started that today, it's kind of late in the game. I don't have a lot of excitement to see that other than the fact it is a title shot. But I'm guessing, and we're jumping ahead here a little bit already, but that's fine. I'm guessing with what we saw on SmackDown, I think Rey Mysterio got the pin on Samoa Joe in some mixed tag team match, whatever it was. So I'm guessing, actually it's just a regular tag team match, sorry. So I'm guessing that they're actually setting for Mysterio to get a title shot at WrestleMania.
I've heard John Cena.
I have too, but I don't see it.
Well, you know they're going to try to bring John Cena. Yeah, you can't see this.
I didn't even mean to do that. That was
pun intended. You know they're going to try to bring John Cena back for something. I don't know what else you do with John Cena. Can't put him in there with Triple H because he's got Batista. So I could see it going with Cena and Samoa Joe. And Samoa Joe, you know, kiss the ground that Cena walks on. You're lucky to get that high profile of a match. You know that'll be the attitude. I don't think they'll put Mysterio and Samoa Joe at a WrestleMania. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't see it.
Yeah, I'm just saying that the build-up. I mean, usually when somebody gets a pinfall on a champ at a tag match, that's a setup. Now, if Samoa Joe wrestles Cena and Samoa Joe ends up with a win to kind of set him up and Cena goes off in the sunset, I can accept that. But if that happens and Cena walks out with the U.S. belt,
oh, I surely won't be shocked.
It'd be as stupid as putting the Intercontinental title on Finn Balor and having him immediately lose it back to
I think you're getting ahead of us.
Yeah.
All right, let's stay on track. More Fastlane. What else?
More Fastlane. What else happened? Okay.
Becky got into a WrestleMania match. We knew that was going to happen. Absolutely hated how it went down. I understand from the storyline perspective, Ronda Rousey is in such a big hurry to get her hands on Becky. She's going to want her in that match. But to me, that just cheapened the match. Give Becky the clean win and really make this thing exciting. To me, it tarnished putting Becky in it. If Becky ends up winning it, especially if she pins Charlotte Flair, I don't think they did this match any favors.
You know, I liked it because I didn't expect, and I don't think you really want to see Becky get a clean one-on-one win and expect that they both go into WrestleMania, appearing as if any of them could, any one of them could win it. So Ronda Rousey coming in and doing that, I think actually would have been kind of a fun thing for her to do, except the fact that she's such the heel, quote unquote, now. It kind of seemed like almost a face thing to do, in the sense that, hey, I want Becky, the fans want Becky, I'll take care of this myself. Maybe more of the anti-hero Stone Cold thing, but not the most hated person of the match is going to do what the fans actually in theory would cheer for. But the way the match was set up, I don't know if I could have believed Becky winning cleanly when she apparently was crippled in the match. But either way, we've got our three-way match, we got the triple threat match. It's what the obvious play was all along, so I guess they just got there.
All right, let's fast forward to something else. What else happened that night? Daniel Bryan and Kevin Owens.
Oh, but wait, there's more. No, there was a triple threat announced. Now, I totally missed this because I think it happened earlier in the show.
But you want to get into this angle first. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, let's start at the beginning with Kofi Kingston being told that he'd get a triple threat match, and it turned out to just be a two-on-one beatdown from the bar, which I didn't actually see this. I don't quite get that. I guess McMahon's just playing Kofi like the fool, and he's just going to get his butt kicked. But no, we are going to get a triple threat match. We got a triple threat match with Mustafa Ali coming out. I have to admit, that was such an awkward match to watch, because were people just booing the match, booing the participants, calling for Kofi, but these three guys have to put on a match? My hat's off to them for putting together it was a good match, right? But it had been such an odd place for Mustafa Ali to be the one surprise entrant that nobody wanted.
What I don't understand about the booking of this match, before Ali got hurt, he was going to get this big push and be the last entrant in the Elimination Chamber. All of a sudden he gets hurt. Okay. Kofi comes in, everybody likes Kofi, puts on a great match. Ali is now back, and now it looks like the push is completely off the table, because I thought Ali just got buried in this triple threat match. I would have at least done something to preserve his credibility. Not only is he not going to get pushed into a title picture anytime soon, I don't know what you do with Ali at this point. Where does he go from that?
It's almost as if, oh crud, we've got Daniel Bryan, who we really want to go into WrestleMania as the champ. We got Kevin Owens, who, maybe we were accidentally going to do something with him, but let's do something with him later. We can't either have either one of these two lose. So who can we throw in there to take the quick pin? Oh, hey, here's the Mortal Kombat guy with the light-up face mask. Bring him on in. But yeah, it's weird because 6 weeks ago, he was the guy. So
you could have brought Jeff Hardy back in to do that. I mean, building off from the Elimination. My point is, you could have brought anybody else in for that third guy.
But Mustafa Ali made sense in the fact that he missed his chance at Elimination Chamber, so you could just awkwardly last minute throw him in whenever he's ready to go, because he was supposed to get a match. So I get the logic, but it was just one of those things. I think I even said it out loud, and there was no one around me. It's like, are you kidding? This is a triple threat match too? Is the WWE the Triple Threat Championship League? It's like all we're freaking getting now.
I fear you're going to find out the answer to that question at WrestleMania.
Oh, good enough. Well, let's stay on this path. On SmackDown, we had, a normal tag team match that was Daniel Bryan, and I think last week we called him the Oak.
The Jolly Green Giant.
Yeah, with Eric Rowan in a tag team match against Mustafa Ali and Kevin Owens. And talk about burying somebody. I mean, Kevin, talking about burying someone, Eric Rowan just did the face plant to Mustafa Ali and just ended the match. I mean, Rowan got the pin against Mustafa Ali. If that, to me, screams better luck next time, kid. Maybe we'll find something for you at Survivor Series.
Yeah, that screams to me that we're going to be shelving Ali for a while and repackaging him down the road.
So with Kofi, we later get, I guess it ended the show with
painful promo. Yes. I thought the promo was extremely painful.
On whose part? I mean, which?
Everybody's.
Okay.
Big E and Xavier Woods, actually, I thought did good on their promos. They were believable. They were logical. They made sense. Then you get to McMahon, who spends 10 minutes talking about Kofi's been there a long time and very talented guy and et cetera.
If you're going in the Hall of Fame, pal, it's going to be with them.
Yeah, then you got 10 minutes of him burying him, but you're not it. You're just not that good. And all that stuff and whatever. And Kofi stands there like a 2-year-old that you just took away his favorite toy, trying not to cry about it. The reaction, I didn't buy it. I didn't like the presentation. And then you have to sit through all of this painful crap to get to the punchline. Well, you can earn yourself a title match at WrestleMania if you wrestle not one, not two, but what was it, five or six?
I lost count because It's like everyone from the back came out.
Oh, and then here's another guy.
It's like Samoa, Randy Orton, Samoa Joe, The Bar, which is two guys, and then it seemed like there was a fifth one for sure. And I'm blanking now who it was. I think Nicholas from last year's WrestleMania tag team match even came out. I think he's in the gauntlet match somewhere too. Which, here's the thing. Kudos for, like, if he gets through that gauntlet match, he really earned it, really deserved it. There's a big, big hoo-ha for him being in the WrestleMania match. But does anybody really believe he can go through all five of those guys in one night?
Well, here's the problem. Most of those guys have WrestleMania matches. So you're going to use them as burying fodder to put over Kofi Kingston when they got matches highlighted at WrestleMania?
Well,
You think he's actually going to put Kofi Kingston over Samoa Joe?
There's gotta be something that happens to where the New Day helps him through, or
five times.
Yeah, I'm trying to guess in my head. How do you get him to pull this off without burying the five guys? Like, now The Bar, yeah, maybe he can get through them because they're quote unquote a tag team. Although I think it's a crime against those two gentlemen, but. You know, Orton's going to have a big match against AJ Styles. You don't have Orton get pinned or submit to Kofi Kingston when he's going to WrestleMania against AJ Styles. Samoa Joe's your U.S. champion. I don't get it either.
I don't know how they get themselves out of that corner. I guess that's why they did it, to make sure that we, the viewers, tune in next week to see how this turns out. Well, surprise, I am actually not going to. I'll read about it later. To me, I just find the thing too farcical to even give it my time, but that's just me.
What do you think the chances are of the reverse happens, is that no, Kofi's not going to make it through it?
I'll tell you what.
He loses against the first guy.
I'll tell you what, if they don't put Kofi in that match, you only got 2 weeks left to put together a title match, so they better be getting on the bicycle and coming up with some plan.
Very true, very true.
It's not going to be Mustafa Ali. It's probably not going to be Kevin Owens now either.
All right, so moving on, one of the other big events, and actually I forgot about this because I, in my head, as the show was winding down 9:30, I'm like, oh wow, we're watching Becky and Charlotte. I mean, when's the show going off? Because I assume Becky and Char was the main event, and then that match happens, and then they start talking. You know, they do the video package on the Shield. I'm like, oh crap! I not only did I forget about it, but I assumed that match was going to happen earlier. Stupid me, because it was Roman Reigns' return match. Because, you know, you and I talked a couple weeks ago about they got to be careful how they use Roman Reigns. Is he really in ring shape? Could he be ready for WrestleMania? I thought, hey, put him in a six-man tag team match. That way he can take some breathers. He can kind of get hidden a little bit if he's not ready to go. No, they were all out on this, doing their triple man power bombs. He's Superman punching nine times. He's doing leaps over. I mean, he's not slowed down. He's fully ready to wrestle.
Good for him. I'm happy for him.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I know that's going to fuel a lot of the naysayers that question the origins of all this in the first place.
Fortunately, I have not really heard anybody else bring that up since. I don't know if you're still hearing it in your circles, but I've not heard a peep about anybody doubting.
No, I think it's pretty much died down. Yeah. It, more to the point, I don't think anybody cares anymore. He's back. Whatever's going to happen, happens. I thought I really have no comments on the Shield match from Sunday night. My comments segue more into the Shield presentation opening up Raw the next night when you had all three of them come out. Two of them talked. One of them conspicuously did not. I'm not sure if Dean was drunk. He was acting a little goofy. Of course, Dean always acts goofy.
That whole segment to me got shut down very abruptly. Like, you know, did they miss up something? Did they decide to abandon it? Like, I thought it was like, hey, they're going to do their farewell address. And then I don't really feel like that's how they announced it. That's how WWE said, hey, they're going to do their farewell address tonight. And I didn't feel like we got that. It was just like, hey, yo, we're here, but Seth's got a big match. So Dean and I are just going to leave. You ready to go, Dean?
No. We can't really say it was a farewell if Dean didn't talk. And he's the one that supposedly is actually saying
he's the
farewell,
one farewelling.
And he didn't even open his mouth. So it was the Harpo Marx thing. But to me, the whole thing about the segment, I wasn't expecting this. It's okay. It set up a what I thought was a really good back and forth between Seth Rollins and Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman, this league.
Which, you know, Heyman virtually can do no wrong. And he delivered. It was a good promo. Seth scored some points on him. He scored some points off Seth. But then Shelton Benjamin. What did you think about that part?
look, I mean,
My opinion is going to surprise you, and I almost promise it'll be different than yours. Go ahead.
Well, that's quite a setup. Number one, I was surprised. I was like, oh, crud. Yeah, he is back. And, you know, Paul Heyman is talking through. I still do that. When I'm really having fun with it, I just call him Paulie Heymanously. But number one, I thought that it was kind of interesting that Paul Heyman was talking about how Shelton Benjamin trained Brock Lesnar to be a professional wrestler, which I don't know if that's true. Because I kind of dipped out in that era, so I'm not sure if those two were like, I mean, it made it sound like they were buddies from college or high school or whatever it was, and that they lay me in on some things I don't know, because I'm not a ruthless aggression.
They were an excellent tag team in OVW.
Okay, so
that's why I thought the whole segment was cool. To even go back and draw off of that connection.
Did he mention OVW specifically?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
But if you are a longtime hardcore, you know, or hopefully you're a little familiar with that history. That's why I thought it was so cool. It was such an unusual reliance back on history that WWE is not known for. I thought it was brilliant. I'm sure there were probably people at home saying, why Shelton Benjamin? I mean, this is a SmackDown guy. He doesn't ever win on SmackDown. He's, you know, kind of buried over there at whole nine yards. I thought it was brilliant. Plus, Shelton Benjamin probably has the second best German suplex, as he demonstrated repeatedly on Seth. I thought it was brilliant. To me, that was the best part of the entire show.
Yeah, see, that's the part I appreciated. As I've stated on the show before, I pretty much quit watching wrestling in March of 2001. Don't know very much about anything that happened in the Ruthless Aggression era, if we can call it that. I did watch a few things when Brock Lesnar started coming up, and the next big thing, he got my attention. You and I were watching some pay-per-views back then, but I did not know who Shelton Benjamin was until later. And the connection, I mean, Paul Heyman had to make the connection for me, and I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. And look, I know his amateur background. I know a few things about him, but I didn't know him and Brock were necessarily connected. But let me give you the counterpoint to this.
Before you do, let me just add, it's not that they're connected. They are also legit real-life BFFs. I mean, they are tight.
Paul Heyman said that as much, yeah.
But that wasn't just part of the shtick. I mean, that is legit. Those two guys go all the way back to Brock's beginning in pro wrestling. To me, understanding that part of it, that's why I was like, wow, this is so great. Unfortunately, WWE, because they don't often go back and play up to history, that point probably was lost on a lot of people because they didn't point that out.
I feel like Heyman did, but it was such a footnote to... Because here's the counter to that. In 2019, the way Shelton Benjamin's been used since he's returned, this is like wanting to see Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg, and then Gilbert comes out. And that's doing Shelton Benjamin a disservice, but you're like, oh, hey, wait a minute. I'm supposed to, A, be scared for Seth Rollins because Shelton Benjamin's out there, and or think that, hey, since Seth Rollins was able to do that to Shelton Benjamin, he might have a better shot against Brock Lesnar than I think.
Well, first of all, in terms of your counterpoint, Michael Cole could have fixed some of this with one simple sentence. These guys were tag teams back in OVW, back in the early 2000s. That would have helped out a lot, okay? The second aspect of this, while I loved the beatdown, I didn't like the match after the beatdown. Because it made no sense. Everybody knew Shelton Benjamin was not going to win that match.
You know what? I actually forgot that it started out as a beatdown and then went into a match. Because that is the typical comeback from a commercial break. And, oh, during the commercial break, they set up a match and this thing is on. Yeah, I guess you could have just had the beatdown and not the match.
They should have. Beatdown, great. Match, stupid. Nobody thought that Steve Seth was going to lose to Shelton Benjamin. That was just a waste of time. And no, he didn't beat him down enough to tenderize him for the WrestleMania match. Actually, this whole thing would have made more sense 6 days before WrestleMania, not 3 weeks out.
Yeah.
Maybe even play it up to a slight injury angle if you really want to build up Seth to overcoming the odds and slaying the beast, whatever.
So speaking of the WrestleMania match, I do have a thought. When I was editing our last show, you made a statement that resonated with me. It was, hey, everybody knows Seth Rollins is going to go into WrestleMania and win the Universal title. Do we now? About a year ago, we were saying the exact same thing about Roman Reigns. Now that Roman is back...
Roman did.
Not at WrestleMania, he didn't. He got his head split wide open and he won at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Aha. But with Roman Reigns back, I wonder if this... I don't know. Let's say Brock Lesnar does the same stunt, pulls all the gear off, gets down there like he's going to split elbow his head wide open, but then Roman Reigns comes out, and then they build that feud back up again, because, you know, I think Roman is like 1-6 against Brock Lesnar, so he needs to even those odds a little bit. But do you think that we're not going to get the outcome that we all assume we're going to get with Seth Rollins winning?
This goes back to a statement that we were making, or at least alluding to earlier. WWE, would it shock me if the Universal title match ended up a triple threat? No. Would it shock me if we had three title matches that were triple threat matches at WrestleMania? No. Yeah, I mean, anything can happen, and I don't say that in a good way. I don't think it should be so predictable that we're all sitting here and you can bet the bank that Seth is definitely going to win. But by the same token, you can be unpredictable and not ruin matches. And if WWE would just come up and figure out what that formula is, I think their ratings and everything else would go back up and whatever. So yeah, I see your point. I agree with that. There have been plenty of times we thought Brock was going to finally go away. Maybe he's never going to go away. Universal title doesn't even exist anymore.
Well, when he wrestles 4 or 5 times a year, why would he go away? Well, I mean, from his perspective.
At some point, because I think even Dana White has alluded to the fact that here recently that Brock Lesnar is going to wrestle another UFC match. At some point, he is going to have to focus all of his attentions for a good solid year to have that one major UFC match, which means cutting out the 3 or 4 yearly WWE appearances. It's got to happen at some point. Is it now? Not necessarily. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. As long as Vince is willing to back the Brinks truck up to Brock's garage, maybe it never happens. I don't know.
Fair enough. All right, any other Fastlane, Raw, SmackDown stuff to talk? There's a lot of things that happened that we didn't cover, but those were the main points. Was there anything else we missed?
There's nothing else that I want to cover. There's a lot of things that happened, nothing that interested me. Other than, did you happen to catch the Orton AJ Styles promo on SmackDown?
I caught some of their...
From Dayton, Ohio, by the way.
Yeah, no, I caught their interactions in the ring. I don't know if I caught much of the promo. We didn't talk about it last week, but I did catch the one from last week when Randy Orton was like, hey, that's why it took you 15 years to get here. And then AJ had some little retaliation against Randy Orton this week. But now what do you think?
For two guys who, quite frankly, I don't think either one of them do the best promos in the world. Randy Orton has long had a knock against him for his promos because he's too slow, he's too boring, he's too monotone. And those points are dead on, my personal opinion. AJ is a heck of a wrestler. He's average to slightly above average on the mic, but his ring skills make up for it. But this one I thought they knocked out of the park. And it started out with Randy Orton coming out. And it was really cool. He starts off by saying in 2002, AJ Styles was just a guy wrestling for $10 a night in front of 12 people in gymnasiums. And then he goes to 2004, makes an allusion to his Ring of Honor years. 2005, he's in Florida with Dixie Carter, so he's referencing the TNA years, and so on and so on. And then AJ comes out, references Evolution, Rated RKO, Legacy, talking about how basically Randy, and the exact word he used was that somebody always has to babysit Randy. He can't do anything on his own. I actually thought it was a good setup. I was impressed with it. I don't know if it's going to make the match any better. To be honest with you, I don't have any expectations for the match. The two of them, the Styles, I don't think it's going to be a blockbuster match. I could be wrong. I'm sure it'll be a good match, but it's not gonna be a home run.
Actually, I'm looking forward to this one. I mean, when you think about, hey, let's chill AJ for a while. He doesn't need the belt. He can go off and do some other things. Randy Orton is, you know, a great star in the WWE over the last 15 years. I think it can be a good match. I think, number one, with AJ in it, it's not going to be a bad match. AJ Styles, I think, can have a good match with anyone who's even remotely competent. Randy Orton certainly fits that bill. Their styles are different enough that I think it can be interesting, and it feels like a big enough match between two big names that feels right at WrestleMania.
Yeah, why don't you ask that question to Shinsuke Nakamura?
But you know, that wasn't wrestling styles, that was booking. They wanted to take those two in a direction nobody wanted to see. When those two wrestled, see matches they've done outside the WWE, they're phenomenal. I did it again, no pun intended, but like, that was, hey, we're going to have this match go a certain way because we're going to book Shinsuke in a place they should have never taken him, and now he's just a punch-you-in-the-groin kind of guy, and then that just kind of ruined that. His matches with Samoa Joe, for instance, were great, but of course, those two have had a lot of practice at those matches, too.
And Shinsuke and AJ are no strangers to each other, and I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
the booking didn't do them any favors.
That was booking, not styles.
Anybody that's watched their new Japan matches, most people agreed, even before the screwball finish, something was off in the match. It was not their best efforts. It was not for those two, it wasn't a good match. I think this will be a good match. I'm not going to go so far as to say I'm guaranteeing it's going to be a good match. I think I think possibly it could be off, especially since the program's kind of getting thrown together, you know, again, haphazardly 2-3 weeks
out, whatever. Well, last minute, yeah.
But, you know, again, it's fine for what it is. Like you said, it keeps AJ out of the title picture. It keeps him with somebody who thinks he's important. I don't know that Randy Orton really is anymore, but...
Keeps Randy Orton out of the title picture.
Keeps Randy... Well, okay. Hey, I'm all for it then. Let's just have this match happen. If Randy Orton's not going for the belt, then I'm good with it.
I mean, what was it?
Point well taken.
Two WrestleManias ago that he won the Royal Rumble and then beat Bray Wyatt for the title at WrestleMania. Did that happen two WrestleManias ago?
Good. Well, let's quit talking about WWE.
Yeah, let's quit... We'll wrap up on the current WWE stuff, but we didn't want to just wrap up because it was a big week. We're just, what, 2 weeks outside of WrestleMania now, so hopefully these things are going to happen. And let's keep talking about WWE, but let's do some throwback stuff. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, but we didn't cover it last week, and now we're behind two players. But since we talked last on Hall of Fame inductees, we've had two more. The first one is Torrey Wilson?
Yeah.
Huh? Look, Torrey was great, but again, I liked her in WCW. I only really know her from WCW. Again, she was popping up in that WWE in the era I didn't watch. So maybe there's something you can tell me about Torrey Wilson that I don't already know that maybe justifies this. But number one, I don't think of her at all as a wrestler. And I certainly don't think she's a Hall of Fame worthy valet manager. But hey, she looked great. She did good stuff on WCW. She played her role and she did fine. But Hall of Fame?
To me, she goes in the Coco Beware wing.
For sure.
The Honky Tonk Man wing.
Yeah.
They're... Actually, not even in that wing.
No, at least Honky Tonk Man wrestled. And
at least he had a belt.
Had a title and has something of a record. And he was related to Jerry Lawler. We established that quite well. So yeah, that one's a head-scratcher. I mean, if that's... I don't get that one.
Well, Torrey Wilson was married to Billy Kidman. That's got to count for something.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, Billy Kidman is... Still a producer slash agent or something?
I don't know. I don't know if he is or not.
I think he has been at least relatively recently, but anyway, I don't
know. I don't really care. You know, Billy Kidman, I didn't care about him when he was a wrestler. I didn't care about him when he was in WCW scratching his face all the time. I didn't care about Billy Kidman when he steroided up and, you know, went over to WWE and, you know, won the cruiserweight belt at 240 pounds. Torrey Wilson in the Hall of Fame, to me, that's in the Drew Carey, Pete Rose, Coco Beware. There's other people out there that could be going in, not Torrey Wilson.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. But hey, let's balance that out with two people I was very excited to hear about going in. Harlem Heat. Now look, Ric Flair in, I think, 2013 became our first and only two-time Hall of Famer. And then this year, we're getting two more. So Shawn Michaels goes in with DX. Booker T's going in as Harlem Heat. So we're getting two additional two-time Hall of Famers. But hey, Harlem Heat, I was really happy to hear that. Always loved them as a tag team. I actually became fans of them as the Ebony Experience when I was watching Global on ESPN. So I'm thrilled. And we've seen them in person. We've seen them at Nitros and pay-per-views. And, you know, I really enjoyed these two guys as a tag team. This is a good pick.
Booker's a nice guy. You and I have had a chance to meet him. Really great guy.
Just met him in November in Louisville.
Yeah, talk your ear off. Booker is one of the rare guys that was good at and had success at both tag team and singles wrestling. Established extended success.
Significant success, yes. At both, yes.
Stevie Ray, yeah, okay.
Well, he's only going in as Harlem Heat.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, so, fine.
I mean, you know, other than Harlem Heat, the only thing he's known for is that feud he had with Big Tiny or you know, whatever Ahmed Johnson's name was in WCW.
Well, he didn't have the feud with him. Those two had the feud with Booker T. Remember, they were wrestling over the T.
Yeah, I know.
Big
yeah.
T and now just Booker.
Whatever Stevie's...
Whoa. He was a member of the NWO.
Everybody was a member of the NWO. That doesn't count. He was no more than the Red Team or whatever.
No, he was Black and White when the Wolfpack was popular, and being on the NWO Black and White and your name not being Hulk Hogan meant you were a B-team NWO guy. So
yeah, I mean, he was there with Scotty Norton and Kurt Hennig and Buff Bagwell, but and Horace Hogan.
And Wall Street and who, yeah.
Yeah, but hey, I'm great with it. I thought they were a great tag team. I loved them when they were with Sherry. I loved them when they were with Colonel Parker. You know, he's the one that actually brought him into WCW. Originally under some auspicious circumstances we don't need to get into.
Yeah, that part may not be, should not be necessarily part of the video package they play, but...
Oh, no, come on, it's part of history.
Who do you think would be make sense to induct them? I mean, I know WWE will pick whoever matches their...
Actually, the person I think should, there's no chance in the world they'd ever get him. I think Scott Steiner should. That would be great. That would be money, baby.
Why, because of their tag team interactions, or just because of what Booker and Steiner did later?
Well, because of their tag team interactions, because of their singles interactions. It was Scott Steiner that Booker T beat on the final Nitro for the world belt.
Yeah. I think he even beat him for the TV title at some point.
Oh, so probably.
I get their interaction. I don't remember how much Harlem Heat and the Steiners as a tag team wrestled in the later 90s.
Oh, they feuded over the belt, yeah.
They must have passed it back a few times, but...
No, they did. They had a history there. And Scott Steiner on the mic is money. I'm sorry. People will tune in to see what that lunatic has to say. I would. I probably won't watch this year. But you put him in there inducting Harlem Heat... Yeah, buddy. I'll be watching that one.
So who do you think really would possibly do it? Because it ain't going to be Scott Steiner.
Oh, Teddy Long.
Why Teddy Long? He never managed them.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
No, I mean, Teddy Long was in WCW same time they were. Teddy Long was general manager, you know, when King Booker was champion. And behind the scenes, they're probably good buds. Who else would you think of?
You're focusing too much on Booker T, though. I'm just wondering who would make sense for the tag team.
Well, the people who would make sense for the tag team, I think, are dead.
Well, Sherry, of course, but...
You're not going to bring in Rob Parker.
I would reckon not. It'd be interesting. By the way, who do you think will induct Honky Tonk Man? Jimmy?
Why not do Jerry Lawler?
Oh, well, Lawler would make sense.
Although I don't know if those two get along. They never
Steamboat?
Got along.
Hey, I would now.
No,
I would pay money to watch that if it ended with Steamboat decking him.
No, karate chop. One of Steamboat's famous chops.
Yeah.
As I make the chop hand that you guys can't see.
You know, this is a podcast, right? Audio. Okay. Anyway.
No, that's not a camera.
It
should be a camera.
Well, at least not for this. All right. So let's move on to some non-WWE news. So.
I know who you have induct Honky Tonk Man. Greg Valentine.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. I forget what was their name?
Rhythm and Blues.
Yeah. They could both dye their hair black again and, you know, make a go of it. I think it'd be a good show.
Speaking of which, we're not going to it, but tomorrow, speaking of all these people, tomorrow in Chillicothe, Ohio, which is a few hours from us, we've driven there a few times to meet some great folks, but tomorrow in Chillicothe, as we're recording this on the 15th, so this event's happening on the 16th, Ricky Steamboat and Honky Tonk Man will both be there doing some signings. So that's kind of interesting, kind of fun with the title change there. So not interesting enough for us to go because we saw Mr. Steamboat last July at Knoxville, but...
And we don't want to see Honky Tonk Man.
You know, you first told me about this event by saying, hey, Honky Tonk Man, Ricky Steamboat's going to be at this thing in Chillicothe. You should get your Intercontinental title signed. I'm like, no, I'm good. Though, I mean, since they actually exchanged the belt, I do like the concept of, like, if two people wrestled for the belt and exchanged hands between them, having those two sign a belt, if I could have multiples of the same belt, I would love to have, like, Sting and Flair on a big goal, Steamboat Flair on a big goal, but that'd be too many belts to be had. But so I get it.
I would almost rather dig Ahmed Johnson up out of somewhere and have him sign the belt.
No, but
then Honky Tonk Man.
Okay, but you know my rule on that. I can't have Ahmed Johnson sign the one I have because he never held that one. I have the classic WWF Legends logo, you know, the WWE.
No, I get that. I'm just trying to
Ahmed Johnson never held that one.
No, I'm just trying to demonstrate exactly how little I like Honky Tonk Man. I've never liked Honky Tonk Man in any incarnation.
We established that.
I didn't like him as a blonde bomber. I didn't like him as Wayne Ferris. I didn't like him as Honky Tonk Man. And I have zero, and we're not even talking about Honky Tonk Man, and here I am talking about Honky Tonk Man. See, that's what the guy does. He demands attention he doesn't actually deserve. So I quit talking about him.
He always had go away heat with me.
Yeah, we're done.
So let's move on to some current news that's not WWE related. So we saw this week, and you actually told me about this. I didn't see this, but there's some interesting trademark action going on involving Arn Anderson, The Horseman, Cody. Lay it on us. What's going on here?
PWInsider.com, free plug. I always recommend these guys. They're always on top of stuff. They've reported this today that Arn Anderson has filed a trademark for Arn Anderson. And I don't remember the company name, CS or something like it. Some company associated with Conrad Thompson. Not a free plug. It just happened to be, you know, the news item. Conrad Thompson has filed a trademark for Four Horsemen. And Cody Rhodes, Runnels, Cody, whatever name he can legally go by, has trademarked the names American Dream and American Nightmare. All of this corresponding with the news that Arn Anderson is going to be doing a live podcast at StarCast. So what do you think? Is this leading to something? I know you're more familiar with Thompson than I am. You're more familiar with his history and connection with the Horsemen, particularly Ric Flair and so on and so forth. What do you make of this? Is because now Arn's no longer a WWE guy. Is he going to show up in AEW? Is this some really piss poor attempt at resurrecting a Horseman feud with the next generation of Rhodes? What do you think? Where's this going?
My first thoughts is that I can't believe that American Dream and Four Horsemen are not trademarked by WWE, if they're trademarkable at all.
According to PWI Insider, they are not.
Wow, because I think I have bought a Four Horsemen t-shirt from WWE. That's interesting.
I'm just telling you what they reported.
I mean, it was the old Crockett Four Horsemen style, so maybe it wasn't. Maybe it's more of an image trade dress type of thing versus trademark. But anyway, that just kind of surprises me. But apparently the Four Horsemen application was filed by a company called Toot Toot LLC, which apparently has the same address as Conrad Thompson's day job company, the mortgage company he owns, First Family Mortgage. So yeah, interesting. Now, of course, what we started speculating even just between the two of us is like, oh, hey, could Cody Rhodes, the American Nightmare and the American Dream, and I guess he can go back and forth between heel and face, whatever, with those type of names or however, could he be starting some modern AEW version of a Four Horsemen Rhodes feud? And my initial response is, I hope not. I mean, if Ric Flair's son or Arn Anderson's kid or Tully Blanchard had a son, or I guess his daughter could be involved with it and Brandy could be involved, whatever. If they had prominent wrestlers who were like next generation, maybe. But if it's just Arn Anderson bringing up a otherwise unrelated four upstarts to go challenge Rhodes, Cody, and his whatever team, it just, that screams to me, wow, AEW, you guys are hitting the ground running, got a lot of great momentum, and you're recycling ideas already. Grant, we haven't had a Horseman Rhodes feud in 25, 30 some odd years, but just doesn't seem very creative.
Well, first of all, let me just go on record as saying that I'm going to rush out tomorrow and trademark the name Dean Malenko. Because that's not Dean Malenko's real name.
Go for it.
And I wish I had, for some stupid reason, had thought 6 months ago, you know what, just out of the blue, I'm going to trademark the name Arn Anderson.
Or Four Horsemen.
Or any of this. Like I said, who knows?
Knowing, and I don't know him personally, but just hearing him, but kind of my impression of Conrad Thompson is this could be just, if nothing else, hey, if the trademark's not there, he's a good businessman, let me trademark it. I could start selling the next generation of Four Horsemen t-shirts. I could do it with Ric Flair and Arn Anderson's image on, and people, it's just a retro nostalgia throwback thing. And great business move. Go for it.
Oh, sure. And that may be all this is. And first of all, I think Arn Anderson would be a terrific addition for AEW. If AEW wants to go a little retro, wants to go a little old school, bring back the concept of the manager, I think Arn Anderson would be a great mouthpiece for some of these young guys that can do all the high flying and can't talk worth crap. Okay, I think that is a brilliant idea. You can lock down Arn Anderson to do that. Do it. I'm with you. I hope it doesn't lead to any kind of new incarnation of the Four Horsemen. I certainly hope it doesn't lead into the next generation of some variety of horsemen having to, be bent on ridding the world of the Rhodeses. I hope that is not where this is going. That being said, I mean, obviously time will tell. And quite frankly, again, not really wanting to give a free plug where I don't have to, but I think that you'll know the story when Arn Anderson does that podcast at StarCast. That's going to give you your answers. What we know historically from guys like Jericho and Kenny Omega, and they use these press conferences, they use these podcasts to set up angles and whatever. And so that's going to be your proof in the pudding. I'm with you. I hope it's wrong.
That's 2019 for you, but explain something to me. Is Arn Anderson doing a podcast or is he doing a panel.
No. He's supposed to be doing some kind of a... I think it's somebody else's podcast, but it's going. Okay. He's going to be on the podcast.
I mean, what StarCast was last time, aside from meet and greets and wrestlers walking around all over the place, but there were all kinds of panels that all sorts of people were doing, and every one of these panels were available on Fight TV, by the way. So if you can't make it to Las Vegas, I mean, chances are they haven't announced this yet, but if they do what they did in Chicago last year, you'll be able to buy some, I don't know, $70, $80, $100 package from Fight TV and witness everything that goes on, all the formal events. So when Eric Bischoff and Bruce Prichard did the Monday Night Wars debate, it was on Fight TV. And they probably aired, I don't know, 30 of them. I mean, they had all kinds of things. So I was, when you first said that, I was assuming he was just going to have some panel. Because all the horsemen are going to be there. They'll probably have a panel. Flair and Steamboat are going to review the 89 trilogy of matches. They're going to have all kinds of panels. And I think they're going to have Funk and Lawler again, because that was originally scheduled for the last one, to talk about the empty arena match. So they'll do all kinds of things like that.
I do not understand this as being part of a panel.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yes.
And I was at the first StarCast for the first 2 days, enjoyed it, saw all kinds of people. I had a discussion in the hallway just randomly with Tommy Young. That was just kind of cool.
Who, by the way, is still bitter at Tommy Rich for ending his career.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
But that'd been you kind didn't of, bring it up. I did.
No, I mean, I wasn't going to bring it up to Tommy Young while I was there. That would have been kind of funny. It's like, hey, Mr. Young, I heard Tommy Rich was going to be here. Have you seen him?
Get any Christmas cards from Tommy Rich?
I ain't going to lie. I'm kind of bitter at Tommy Rich for that, too. When we saw him last time we were in Chillicothe, Tommy Rich was there, which, by the way, unrecognizable to me. I think the only thing you and I could say to each other about, hey, do you want to get to see Tommy Rich? We were like, yeah, only to yell at him for ending Tommy Young's career.
I tried to get you to get him to sign your belt.
Again, I had the wrong belt.
You did not. You had the 10 pounds with you.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I had the... No, I wouldn't have taken that belt with me. I would have either had the big gold, which I don't think I even had that one, because I think I actually took the tag belt, because that's when I had J.J. Dillon and Bobby Eaton sign it. But Tommy...
You took it one of the times we went up there.
Big gold.
No, 10 pounds, because I carried it in the NWA bag. One of the two times we went up there, you had it.
We haven't discussed any of my collecting on this podcast yet, though...
No, he's a nut.
We will, but I am a... I'm going to call myself a novice belt collector. But one thing that kind of irks me, and one of my rules is, I don't have a wrestler sign a belt that wrestler did never held. So I've been to a lot of conventions. I've seen Sting multiple times, Ric Flair multiple times, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to use these two guys as examples because they're long time, been over the business for many, many years, many generations and of belt designs have went past them. And I don't understand when somebody goes up to Ric Flair and has Ric Flair sign the current WWE World Heavyweight title. The one that, well, not Daniel Bryan, but you know, the one that Daniel Bryan put in the garbage, right? You know, not the current hemp belt, but just that black SmackDown strap and have Ric Flair sign that. And I'm like, I know he was WWE champion. He's in the lineage of that belt because he held it twice. I get it, but you get him to sign the Winged Eagle, not the current network logo belt. I don't get that. If you go in WWE shop right now, you can buy side plates of Sting for that same belt. And I don't get it. He never held it. Which is Seth Rollins' fault. I mean, sorry, did I say that out loud? I don't get that aspect of collecting an autograph, collecting is having a guy sign a belt he never held.
I know.
Thanks for your insight.
That's all I got.
I was kind of hoping you'd offer a counterpoint because maybe I'm missing something.
No.
Like I said, I'm a novice belt collector. Not in the sense, I mean, I think I
have... You got 14 of them. You're not a novice.
No, I only have 9. Don't oversell it. But no, why I'm a novice is because I don't know what I'm doing. I've overpaid for belts. I get belts that
we're
not telling that story. When I get a belt, even if I like it, I think the price is right, I do look at it. I'm like, I'm not sure if this is good quality. Should I get this re-leathered? Or where'd these plates come from? Am I... What am I doing? But to me, it's just an enthusiasm. Like, hey, if I like it and I was okay with the price, I've got a nice case downstairs where I've got all kind of the Crockett era NWA belts that I think is a beautiful display. I've got some autographs. Hopefully on our YouTube page, I'll do some videos, let you guys see what I've got. But I belong to a couple belt groups on Facebook, and I learn a lot from these guys. I get connected with some great belt makers, some people who just do re-leathering. I'm probably going to use some of them to say, hey, can you put my U.S. title on a nice strap, and I'll hopefully string you guys along that journey a little bit, just to change up our topics a little bit, but not today.
All right, what else we got?
I think the last question, the last thing you and I talked about wanting to discuss, it actually ties into our Four Horsemen discussion. And
well, it's actually what prompted the question in my mind.
Yeah, so, and oddly enough, I was listening to a podcast this week where I felt like the gentleman asking the question misused the term. And then a day later, you text me the question. I'm like, oh, this is perfect because I think this gets misused. So the question is, what is the difference in pro wrestling between a stable and a faction? The concept is, a lot of times people use the term faction versus stable. I think faction is used way more often.
What's the difference to you? How do you define the two?
Here's how I define it.
All right.
So
here's our baseline.
Here's the baseline for me. And let me describe it with some examples. I feel like a faction is a group of wrestlers who are sort of working towards common goals. So Four Horsemen's a faction. So all four members of the Four Horsemen were feuding with the same guys. Nikita Koloff, Dusty Rhodes, Road Warriors. They did the War Games together, etc., etc. Bobby Heenan in WWF had a stable. Rick Rude, and I don't know if these guys all existed simultaneously, but let's say Rick Rude, Kurt Hennig, the Brainbusters, weren't always getting in each other's business. In fact, they rarely were, but Bobby Heenan was common. And if someone like, I don't know, Paul Orndorff got mad at Bobby Heenan and started strangling him, then yeah, maybe a King Kong Bundy or a Big John Studd would come out and help him, but they were never really involved in the same angles. Bobby Heenan just happened to be kind of a common thread. Paul Ellery and the Legion of Doom was a little bit more to me of a stable, even though I think they probably interacted more than what I just described with Bobby Heenan. But that's kind of how I always thought about the terms. And quite frankly, I don't think there have been a lot of stables in at least mainstream wrestling in a while. It's usually a very close-knit faction of guys involved in generally the same angle.
All right, I am about to lawyer you with your own definitions. Going back to the late 70s, early 80s. Jimmy Hart's First Family.
Yep.
Stable or faction?
Okay. You know I don't know much about. I mean, we didn't watch that, so I don't know what they did week in, week out. It's like, to me, it was almost like they're all out against Jerry Lawler, right?
Right.
So
by your definition, they were a faction.
Maybe. I honestly don't know. I didn't watch that week in, week out. I don't know how it came off. You telling me which one is it? Is it traditionally considered a stable?
Oh, no, it was clearly a stable. Let me give you my definitions of stable, okay? Here's how I view the stable situation. If you got a group of wrestlers and there's a manager, first of all, I think manager is a key ingredient. You cannot be a stable without a manager, okay? If you're the NWO and you've got Hall and Nash and Hogan and then 20 other guys and whatever, and there's no one organizing Bobby Heenan, J.J. Dillon type of person, you cannot be a stable. You got to have a stable master. Okay, so they're clearly a faction.
And you don't consider someone like Eric Bischoff or even Hulk Hogan himself of being the prominent leader of everything the NWO does?
They weren't a manager. Neither of those guys acted in a managerial role as we understand the traditional wrestling manager. Okay?
Okay.
The traditional manager in a stable was the guy who did all the talking and, will be presented as, this is my group of guys. The wrestlers came and went. They were different. Today, Dream Machine is part of the First Family. Tomorrow, he's kicked out and Wayne Ferris is brought in. That type of stuff, okay? The stable is centric around the manager.
Which is consistent with my Bobby Heenan example.
Well, but it's not consistent with some of the other things you just said. NWO, that's an easy one. Even though Hulk Hogan is, because he's the world champ, he's kind of the leader. You know, Eric Bischoff as the authority figure that goes bad.
Did you just say Bischoff?
Maybe.
Who cares?
Yeah. Bischoff is, the authority figure gone bad. He wasn't the manager. He didn't do the talking for those guys. He didn't do anything. I mean, he didn't tell Hall. He didn't give orders to Hall and Nash. He didn't give orders, and neither did Hogan. So that's clearly a faction. You talk about stables. Jimmy Hart was the centric piece in the First Family. He did the primary talking, the wrestlers that came and went, but it was always Jimmy Hart's First Family. So that's a stable.
And the underlying feud is really Jimmy Hart versus Jerry Lawler.
Well, primarily.
And Jimmy threw whatever wrestlers at Jerry Lawler, and they became part of it. But like you said, I mean, even like with by Bobby Heenan example, Bobby Heenan's... Generally, most of the people he was with, the main players, were going after Hogan in some way, shape, or form.
In the WWF.
And when Orndorff would turn on Bobby...
He was replacing him with Haku.
He would just send then King Kong Bundy after Hulk Hogan or something. And then maybe, but then someone else in Bobby's stable would also go take care of Orndorff sort of thing. But
yeah.
But the Orndorff-Hogan feud didn't necessarily crisscross back again until they eventually did. But then someone like Bobby Heenan would have a tag team, would be feuding with somebody completely different.
Now, the AWA Bobby Heenan, at least in the early to mid-70s, that's a little trickier to define.
Again, I'm less familiar with it.
Well, I'm going to clue you in here. Because, you know, the early to mid-70s Bobby Heenan family in the AWA has got Nick Bockwinkel, who doesn't need anybody to talk for him. Ray Stevens, yeah, he wasn't that great on the mic, but, you know, he was a legit superstar. You had the Blackjacks. You rotated a couple of them guys in and out and whatever. That one's a little harder to define. I mean, Bobby was still, let's be realistic, he was still the main focus of that group, so I think it would still be considered a stable, but he definitely didn't outshine the wrestlers individually like Jimmy Hart did with the First Family. Same thing with J.J. Dillon when he was in Florida. You know, he would have Cowboy Ron Bass, or he would have whoever come and go, or Sir Oliver Humperdinck, you know, with his group of people. I mean, those were guys, the Black Barts, the Ron Basses of the world, they were guys that were part of a stable. They weren't good enough to ever be an independent, quote, faction. Now, it gets a little trickier also when you start talking about the Four Horsemen, because here, you got a manager.
Well, JJ's the through line, but, like, JJ ain't the star.
But you didn't need him.
Right. That one, I think most people would say, yeah, the Four Horsemen were a faction.
Oh, yeah, you are definitely not going to call Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, and the fourth guy part of JJ's stable. That's not going to happen. So there's some exceptions that I think that point to the rule.
So let's go through some. One of my favorites that I always considered a faction. But what?
Yeah, let's play this game. Stable or faction? I love this game.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm getting ready to do. I'm going to write these down because I want to take some notes.
All right.
So we already said Four Horsemen, definitely a faction.
Faction.
We have the Heenan family. The WWF Heenan family.
Oh, stable.
That one's a stable. Sounds like you're making the argument for Jimmy Hart and his first family. Is that what they called it?
Yeah.
Stable.
Clearly a stable.
So Paul Ellering's original Legion of Doom that had multiple people, not just the Road Warrior tag team, but
started out as a stable.
That's what I thought. That's what I would have said.
Never promoted to faction, though, because
You said started out as a stable. Did it ever become a faction?
No, it just became Paul Ellering and the Road Warriors.
Yeah, the Road Warriors were just their nickname.
They weren't a faction.
Yeah, I always
I don't think you're going to have a faction with just two guys.
Yeah, they're just a tag team whose nickname was the Legion of Doom.
Midnight Express. They weren't a stable or a faction either.
When it was Bundy and Roberts and the Road Warriors and
Buzz Sawyer,
however, when they rotated through.
Stable. Of course, the Road Warriors hadn't yet quite become the big superstars yet. Didn't take them long, but
right.
Still a stable. Yes.
Right. To me, this is one of the underrated, and maybe it's because they really didn't last that long, but when they were around, I liked them a lot. Dangerous Alliance.
Stable.
Okay, see, I kind of thought them more as a faction because it seemed like they... You're right. Heyman is Dangerously. And now I can actually call him Dangerously. See, Paulie Dangerously obviously was the through line, would accompany all of them to the ring, and sometimes Medusa would go. But they all had this same focus on, we're taking out Sting. It's all about taking out Sting. Now, that doesn't mean Zbyszko and Arn Anderson didn't have a tag team match against somebody, win the belt, and then they kick Zbyszko out. Then it was Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton would go, you know, Steve Austin have his little feud. But at the end of the day, it was all about killing Sting.
Yeah, but see, I don't put that in my definitions of either of these. So to me, that doesn't factor into the equation.
So you're saying they're a stable.
To me, they're a stable because they were a collection of independent wrestlers that, quite frankly, they didn't really last long enough to become a faction, in my personal opinion. I think there's got to be some longevity to a faction also. Horsemen, NWO, there was longevity there.
I might still go with the faction thing, but we can at least say that the stable make... Look, if the through line is they have a single manager who's calling the shots... Because, you know, I kind of gave you the Heenan example. Like, they would kick out Zbyszko, replace him with somebody else. I mean, it's technically kind of a rotating door of wrestlers, but it's all at Paul E. Dangerously's beck and call of what they go do.
But those guys didn't need Dangerously to do the talking for them.
Rick Rude certainly didn't, but
no,
like...
No, Arn Anderson, Rick Rude, Zbyszko, none of those guys needed him to mouth for them.
Not mouth for them, but... He certainly did generate his fair share of the heat for the feuds that they were in. I mean, it was called the Dangerous Alliance. It centered around him bringing all these guys in. Because it really started with, like, Paulie Dangerously was announcing, was mad at what WCW did to keep him down and wouldn't put him on the, you know, whatever he was claiming on TV. But I still got a manager's license, and I'm bringing in some guys, and I'm going to stick it to WCW. And I'm starting with Rick Rude, and me, Rick Rude, and Medusa, we're going to take down Sting. And then it just started building. I mean, they probably went a good year anyway, maybe a year and a half, but he built a team to go stick it to WCW, and the face of WCW was Sting, and that's who they went after. And had that War Games match between Dangerous Alliance versus Sting and his crew. And
well, no offense. I can't believe we're sitting here debating this long over a group that ultimately was insignificant. So, but anyway, okay, next.
Yeah, see, you're smiling right now because you know how much I enjoyed the Dangerous Alliance.
But they were historically insignificant.
You know, even when the WWE, when the network started and they started those top 10 lists, I was actually pleased. They did a top 10, I think they called it factions.
They did.
I don't know if there was some.
Oh, they're not going to use the name Stable. That's too kayfabe. Come on.
Well, maybe. But I think the Dangerous Alliance did get in the top five, or at least they were in the top 10. So
probably.
Come on.
Historically insignificant.
Let's throw some other random ones out there. We already called NWO a fact. Nation of Domination.
Oh, faction.
Faction, yeah.
They even have a manager.
In fact, I think the mid to late 90s WWF was very faction heavy. It seemed like everybody was part of a faction.
You had the Disciples of the Apocalypse, DOA, the Bikers.
DX was starting, that's clearly a faction.
You had the, whatever they called, the Latinos, Savio Vega and his crew.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember what they called them. Los Periquos or something, and that might be wrong.
Yeah, no,
but anyway,
that's right.
So you had them, you had Nation of Domination. Oh, that was all about factions. I mean, everybody was playing
everything
off
in their Brood, Ministry of Darkness, the Corporation.
Yeah.
All factions.
Well, let me throw out an interesting one.
Throw me some more stables.
Let me throw you out an interesting one from the same time period. What about Raven's Flock?
Yeah, I'm pausing because I'm trying to remember what they did. Granted, not a manager, but Raven kind of filled that role.
Kinda.
He was an active wrestler.
You had Perry Saturn. You had Scratchy Boy. You had Sick Boy.
Scratchy Boy, if you remember from earlier.
Billy Kidman. Yeah.
You had Reese.
Yeah.
Lodi.
Yeah. Crowbar.
I probably would have defaulted to faction.
I have to agree with you because, again, you don't have a Bobby Heenan and Gary Hart figure.
Okay, let's...
Even though Raven did do all the talking, because nobody else was allowed to talk.
Yeah. What about me, Paige?
So that's a weird one.
Let's flip the switch here. We're listing a lot of factions. What were some of the other stables? We only listed three. Heenan family, Hart family.
Come on. Gary Hart had a stable all over the world. I mean, whether it was World Class, Florida, Georgia, it was Kabuki. Sometimes it was Bruiser Brody. Sometimes it was Missing Link.
How many times did he have several wrestlers in a stable?
Oh, it's like World Class, Mid-Atlantic, Florida. I mean, yeah. Here's another interesting one for
you. Did he ever have a name?
Gary Hart?
No, for his stable.
I don't think so. I don't think you have to have a name.
I wonder if a key difference between stable and faction is all in the branding.
No. Because you got the factions, NWO,
which are
Horsemen,
heavily branded.
Yeah, but
the stables really aren't. You get the Heenan family.
And the First Family.
The First Family. Legion of Doom is kind of, that's good branding.
That's still a name.
But it's just like, it's the Bobby Heenan crew. It's the branding's all against the manager. That's why I was wondering if Gary Hart had like the Hart family or the Gary Hart experience.
Well, he's not a left-handed guitar player from the 60s, no. No, I mean, Gary Hart had stables. It just, you know, a lot of people rotated in and out of them.
You mentioned JJ, non-horseman JJ.
JJ, Kevin Sullivan down in Florida when he had Maniac Mark Lewin and, the Zambui Express, I think, started out with him. I think that'd be a, well, I don't know.
What's Dungeon of Doom then?
Who's Dungeon of Doom?
Oh, come on. Early Nitro Hogan era with the Shark and Butcher and Zodiac.
Oh, that's clearly a stable. Oh, that wasn't a faction. Because Kevin Sullivan was the manager / ringleader. It all centered around him. They weren't a faction, even when they brought in Yeti and Big Show.
I can get behind that. I can get behind that being a stable.
Yeah.
Even though they had the branding of they're the Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah.
They're not the Kevin Sullivan family.
Sheik Adnan Al-KC.
Admiral
Akbar down in World Class.
Yep, that's
tons
a clear
of
one.
Stables.
That's a clear one.
Yeah.
See, and you and I have had this conversation before, and I've talked to my buddy at work. One of the things that wrestling is really missing these days is where the managers and valets can really help promote the wrestlers who need a little bit more help on the mic. Now we just take all of these wrestlers, put them on the mic, and hope for the best. Because we heavily produce and script what they say, so they're going to be fine. Why pay a manager?
Disclaimer, we still hate Leo Rush.
Lashley.
Which, by the way, you forgot to cover that earlier.
I did, actually. We talked before we went on air. Well, I did.
Bobby Lashley beat Finn Balor for the belt back, blah, blah, blah. Nobody understands it. Move on.
Okay. I referenced it as a joke earlier, but we just didn't talk the topic. Yeah. Definitions aside, I like reminiscing on all these because that is something that's missing. I kind of half hope, and Heyman probably doesn't want to do it, but I kind of wish that Heyman would pick up a couple extra guys and form a stable. Have a couple other people he's helping along the way. Maybe a tag team. Maybe somebody in SmackDown.
He's tried that, and it doesn't work. He tried it with CM Punk, and it didn't work.
See, I totally missed the CM Punk.
He loosely tried it with Rob Van Dam,
too. Actually, that he was accompanying Robbie Van Dam to the ring when I started watching back again in 2014. I like the because Van Dam was in the Money in the Bank match.
They put him with Cesaro once.
Oh, I do remember that.
That didn't go anywhere.
But why not? What's missing in that formula?
The effort from the creative team to actually develop it and make it successful.
Yeah, well, that's the shame,
You can't throw him out there twice in a row and, well, this isn't working, so we're going to scrap it.
That is, that's the big problem with WWE anyway, of just abandoning ideas because they don't take off immediately. Or abandoning ideas because they take off too big immediately. Nexus, stable faction for the 2 weeks they lasted.
Oh, clearly a faction. They didn't have a manager.
It did seem to me like, though, that it's centered around Barrett.
Well, I don't care. That's like saying the NWO centered around Hogan. Matter of fact, the Nexus was just NWO light. I mean, it really was the exact same group with a lot less talented players.
Who all was in that? I only remember...
Well, Wade Barrett, who at the time was still green. He hadn't developed.
I remember Barrett.
Daniel Bryan was in it.
Bryan being in it.
Yeah.
And getting fired the night after, and they brought him back. But who else was
Darren Young.
Was he really? Okay.
Yeah. I don't remember. But, I mean, it was five or six guys.
But my understanding is, my buddy at work tells me about this, that the Nexus was great, everybody loved him, and then 2 weeks later, John Cena just, like, kills them all.
He's half right. John Cena did kill them all. I don't know that I would say everybody loved them, but...
Well, keep in mind, he's like 16 years younger than we are. So.
I know. Yeah. Of course, that's what got Daniel Bryan fired from WWE the first time.
Right.
That whole little...
For choking a guy, yeah. Or the tie, yeah.
Choking the ring guy, but yeah.
Because you wouldn't want your wrestlers to be aggressive now when they're creating anarchy.
No.
So, guys, I think next time we come back, we got a couple weeks to WrestleMania. I think, Greg, the next show we do, we don't cover any new stuff. We don't cover current stuff. We have a backlog of, like...
Thank God.
Nostalgic, retro topics of things of wrestling yesteryear that we gotta talk through. I think on the next show, we take two of those and we just go to town, like we did on Faction Discussion today.
We can finally get into stuff that I can enjoy.
Amen. So, guys, thanks for downloading the show and listening to us. You know, we are just recording some shows. We don't have everything figured out with our social media and our logos yet. But we just want to make it to where when you do find us, you're going to have several shows to go back and listen and binge through, hopefully. And some of it's going to be dated because we're talking events that have already happened. But, hey, test drive us a little bit. See how good we are. Peace.